I should have thought, Ambrose said quietly, nodding to a child in the street. You're tired, aren't you? I'm dirty and stiff as much as tired. And don't you still have to do whatever ceremony you were talking about? Oh, yes, I'd forgotten. Gerd, forgive my thick head, blast. But you'll want to see that, even you aren't Gerdish. The Marshal would want you to be there. All right. Pox wished he'd get to the point. She saw Sir Felis's horse and escort outside the brewmaster's gate as they passed. Once at the Grange, Ambrose took charge quickly. I'll rub down the black and put him up. With the Marshal away, we have plenty of space. You can wash up if you want. There's plenty of water in the scullery. And if you need any bandages or anything... No, said Pox, abandoning the idea of a good soaking bath. Just to get this dust off. She took off her helmet and sluiced her head as Ambrose led horses away. The cold water revived her. She wiped her neck with a wet cloth and had most of the grime off her hands and arms before Ambrose returned. Now, he said, leading the way into the Grange proper. I expect the other yeomen will be here soon. They saw us ride by. What I want to know is whether you'll come with me when I go to seek the Black Web Priest. What? Pox was completely confused. Didn't you hear him? There's a Black Web, a priest of Acrea, somewhere in that keep. I've got to go and... Wait, Ambrose, didn't the Marshal tell you not to go after the brigands? The brigands, yes, and I didn't. This is different. A true evil, Pox. Something like this, I can't let it alone. But Ambrose, you're not a Marshal. Can you fight such a thing? Wouldn't it be better to wait for the Marshal to come back? He said to stay with the Grange. Ambrose shook his head. What if he moves? Now we know where he is, the center of evil for this whole area, and it's my responsibility. What about your dream? That's just it. Ambrose looked sober but determined. Pox, such a dream could be an evil sending, to keep me from doing what I should. If I don't try, for fear of dying, what kind of Gerdsman am I? It could be a warning from Gerd, couldn't it? Yes, but I can't tell. Then I think you should wait. Pox stuck her hands in her sword belt. Ambrose, you don't know anything about what's there except what a robber said. How do you know he's telling the truth? Even if he is, you don't know enough. A priest of Acrea. Very good so far, but alone? With other troops? Human or other? Ambrose had been pacing back and forth. He stopped. I see. I hadn't thought of that. It's your experience, I suppose. Not just that. I would go with you, but you said the other day that you had to obey the Marshal. I have to obey Gerd. Ordinarily that means the Marshal, but... He stopped, as the yeoman who had been with Pox that morning came into the Grange. Pox noticed that none of them had changed from their blood-stained clothing. She wondered why. Mal winked at her as they all came to the platform. Ambrose climbed onto it. What followed seemed strange to Pox. He called on each one to give an account for his own actions. After each recital, Ambrose crossed his blade with a man's weapon. When it came to Mal, the big man grinned as Ambrose's sword tapped his axe blade. Then Ambrose inspected all the weapons and supervised their return to the Grange racks, for only Mal had carried his own. After that, they all repaired to the inn for a round of ale. Here the others who had been involved joined them. Pox slipped upstairs for a bath and change of clothes. She put on her new clothes, enjoying the feel of good cloth. It was hard to believe that she'd been in a battle that morning. She thought back to the Duke's company and laughed to herself. Very different indeed. No company chores, no guard duty at night, and the others had fought well. Perhaps she could get used to having strange companions at her side, or none. Even so, she slipped the mail shirt back on and pulled her best leather tunic over it. She opened the door to find a girl leaning on the wall opposite. Pox recognized her as one of the junior yeomen. The girl stood away from the wall as Pox came out.
Please, lady, could I speak to you?
Yes, said Pox. What is it?
You're a fighter, aren't you? I mean, I know you are, but isn't that, I mean, don't you make your living that way?
All this in a rush.
Yes, said Pox, trying not to laugh.
Why?
Well,
the girl looked down, then back at Pox. She was as tall, Pox realized, and nearly as broad-shouldered.
I want to be a fighter, too,
she said finally.
They laugh at me here, the people in town. I want to show them. The marshal says I'm good.
Pox looked at her wrists. They were strong, already marked with training scars.
Well, I can tell you it's possible. I did it. But I know. They say, those who saw you fight today, they say you're good. The senior yeoman told us, too, after they'd drilled with you. I know I can do it, too, but will you let me?
Let you? How do you mean?
I want to train with you, like a squire or something.
But I'm not a knight. Pox stared at her, bewildered. I don't need a squire.
I'll earn my way.
The girl went on heedless.
I swear I will. I'm a hard worker, and I'll do anything you say if you'll let me fight beside you.
Listen, began Pox, then stopped. She remembered too well how much she had wanted what she now had. What could someone have said to her at that age?
I don't even know your name.
Suli.
Suli. It's not that easy. I don't know what I'll be doing next.
You're not going to quit fighting?
No, but I don't know when or what yet. I don't even know what training you've got. What if you can't...
You could talk to the marshal or even Ambrose. They know me. Please, Lady Pox, I'll do exactly what you say. I can groom your horse and take care of things.
If you want to learn to fight, Suli, why don't you join a mercenary company? The Holverics recruit around here, don't they? Suli shook her head.
I've heard about that, all marching and drill, and the same old thing day after day. I could do that here, just drilling with a yeoman. I want...
She looked down the passage, as if across a field.
I want excitement, battles, travel, like you've had.
Pox grinned. Suli, I started as a mercenary. Gods above, I had as much travel and excitement as I could take. It's the best training, I swear it. Suli shook her head again.
And you left. Why should I do it at all, when it's not what I want in the end? Please, please let me fight with you. If you don't like me after a while, then you can send me away, but give me a chance.
Her eyes held a look that Pox could not name. She was flattered and disturbed at once. I'll think about it. Pox started down the passage. Suli was at her shoulder. She started to speak, but Pox held up her hand. No, I didn't say yes. What does your family think about this? She could hardly believe she had asked that. She, who knew only too well what families thought. Suli scowled.
My family, they don't get along here. My dad's a trapper. He does a bit of day work in the tannery sometimes. He's gone mostly, expects me to take care of everything. But my brothers, they're old enough to work and all that. I don't care what he thinks.
Pox turned to the stairs. My father didn't want me to leave either.
You see, I said we were alike. Please.
Enough, Suli. I said I'd think about it. Pox could see the others still clustered around two tables pulled together. Arvid and one of the yeomen were arm-wrestling. Mal looked up and waved to her. She came to the table, aware of Suli watching her back.
"We were wondering if you'd decided to leave us for good," said Mal.
"No, Suli wanted to talk to me."
"Oh."
Mal and several of the others exchanged glances.
"Is she bothering you?"
"Bothering me? No. She has an exalted idea of my achievements." Pox snatched the top of a pile of fried cakes a serving girl put in front of Mal.
"Good luck for you," she reminded him. The others roared. "By Gerd's arm, you're quick," said Mal, slightly redder than usual. "I never had anyone turn that trick back on me."
Pox smiled, with her mouth full. A tankard appeared in front of her. She picked it up and took a sip.
"Seriously," began Ambrose, "if Suli pesters you too much, I'll speak to her."
"I should speak to you, rather. She wants to train with me, and work with me. As a squire," she said. "But you know I'm not a knight. What would I do with a squire?"
"As for that, you know much more than she does. She fights well, for the little training she's had, but she's got no more experience in actual fights than I have."
"Not exactly," said Mal. "She's been in some rows."
"Brawls," said Ambrose. "That's not the same."
"No, I know that. She's an interesting girl, though."
Mal took a long pull at his tankard. One of the other men shook his head. "Seriously, she's one of the best of the junior yeomen."
"As far as fighting goes, but fighting's not all of it," said Ambrose.
"Well, it's the most important part, isn't it? For Gerdsmen, anyway. You know she's not happy here, Ambrose. Not since Diorcha left. She wants
excitement and glory," said Ambrose tartly. She's more apt to get a broken head, or don't you agree, Pox? Pox nodded slowly. I told her she should join a mercenary company for more training. I haven't seen her fight. I don't know what she can do. Still, I can understand. I couldn't wait to get away from home. If someone like me had come through Three Furs, I'd have walked on fire to talk to her. I can't recommend her exactly, said Ambrose, looking at his hands, but I think she'd be honest and loyal. If you want someone... I hadn't thought about it. Pox took another fried cake off Maul's platter. She wondered what it would be like to have a squire. The Duke had squires. She tried to imagine herself coming down that trail from the ruined wall, and someone like Suli, throwing herself between an enemy and her own shield. It didn't seem right. She was not a knight. She had never been a squire herself. She didn't know what a squire should do, or how to teach it. Many free swords travel in pairs or trios, said Maul. Then they have someone they can trust. He leaned back to let the other yeomen pass. They nodded to Pox and Ambrose, and went out. Sometimes, Ambrose shook his head. Not always. But if you wanted to hire her, Pox, go ahead. I don't think you'd do her any harm, and though she's a little wild, she'll serve you honestly.
Is she a guardsman?
Well, not exactly. She's not old enough for the final oaths, and her family isn't girdish. She's sworn to the local grange only. Of course, I'd rather she found a girdish patron.
I wondered about that.
But you seem honest enough yourself. Master Sedfer hopes you'll end up a yeoman of gird.
I might, said Pox thoughtfully.
If it's permitted to answer, broke in Arvid, I'd like to know if you found how those robbers were fencing their spoils.
Fencing?
Pox didn't know the term. Ambrose did, and looked sharply at Arvid. He means, Pox, selling stolen goods somewhere. Thieves call that fencing them.
Arvid smiled.
So do others, young sir. I see that you know the term.
Ambrose scowled. Indeed, honest men must learn thieves' speech, or lose by it. But to answer your question as much as I may, no, we didn't find out where the goods are being sent, or how.
I told Pox, Yeoman Marshal, that I did not believe those men had been thieves for long.
Arvid sipped his ale, and went on.
I know you are suspicious of me, but that is the truth. And if I'm right, then someone else is running them, taking the stolen goods, fencing them, and that person, not those poor men, is the dangerous one. Until that person is caught, these attacks will continue.
Pox saw a gleam of interest in Maul's eyes, but he was apparently relaxed and half asleep, leaning on the wall. Ambrose leaned forward. How, if Pox has killed or captured all the active robbers?
Arvid snorted.
How hard is it to fool poor men? How were those men trapped into thievery? As long as the world holds men whose arms are stronger than their wits or will, just so long will subtle men find simple ones to risk and die for them.
Pox thought that could have more application than Arvid intended. She glanced at him and met a sardonic glint that set her mind on edge. Ambrose missed it.
I think, sir, he said quietly, that you and I, and Pox, perhaps, should have a quiet word together.
I think that indeed, young sir. Yet I would not have it noticed, for I am convinced that someone in this town is telling dangerous tales.
You may be right.
I am, said Arvid, with calm authority. We must meet, and we must meet quietly.
Maul sat forward.
Isn't that the way to be noticed, sir, in this town?
Arvid glanced at him.
You would know, I expect.
Maul grinned broadly.
Oh, yes, I would know. And if you're speaking to our yeoman marshal, I guess I'd like to be there.
Maul!
No offense, yeoman marshal, but I've seen his sword work, remember? You know I can keep quiet.
Arvid smiled, the same charming smile at Maul. Pox noticed that Maul simply absorbed it, without changing expression. He looked very much like a stupid country lout.
That's fine with me, sir. I'm not intending assassination of your yeoman marshal, or corruption, either. And you are welcome to watch me as closely as you wish.
The council meeting that evening was straightforward. Pox, seconded by Maul, gave her account of the attack. Sir Felis reported his interview with the captured robbers,
and turned over a list of the captured arms and other valuables. Pox was asked why she had not entered and explored the keep, but the council accepted her explanation without surprise or comment. Even the master stonemason seemed content. They argued a bit over the arms, and finally awarded her a third of their value. Hebbenford recommended that the black horse be given to her outright, and after some discussion it was done. No one mentioned the master thief that Ambrose, Arvid, and even Sir Fellis believed to be still lurking in the ruins. Afterwards, Ambrose, Pox, Maul, Sir Fellis, and Arvid all gathered at the Grange. Arvid lagged behind them, and when they were all sitting down in the chairs Ambrose fetched from the marshal's study, he lounged against the door.
"I have endured quite a bit of your suspicion," he said calmly. "I think perhaps I should tell you precisely what I'm doing here, though I should prefer that you don't tell everyone else."
"Why not?" asked Sir Fellis, looking grim.
"Because I can be a great help to you," said Arvid. "If you choose to spread my fame too widely, I'll simply leave."
"Well, then?" Arvid looked pointedly at Ambrose.
"The yeoman marshal is the one I'd like to speak to. Will you, young sir, swear to say nothing of my guild or mission?"
I don't know." His hand was on his medallion. "If you're evil..."
"Evil?" Arvid laughed. "Sir, I am not what you would call good, but I serve no evil deity. That I will swear, and on your relic if you demand it."
He looked at Pox.
"I am no more evil than this warrior. She is not girdish, nor am I, but we have both spilled robber's blood today alongside your yeoman."
Ambrose flushed. "I will keep your secrets, sir, as long as they do not dishonor Gerd. But as to that, I will be the judge."
"Fair enough. I trust the honor of the Fellowship of Gerd."
Arvid glanced around, gathering all their eyes on him.
"Now, some of you, and many others, have thought I was a thief. I am not. I am, however, acquainted with the Thieves' Guild."
He paused, and the silence thickened.
"I am, in fact, on a mission for them at this time."
"And you ask me, a yeoman marshal of Gerd, to keep silence?" Ambrose jumped up. Arvid's hand rested on his sword.
"Wait, sir, hear me out. Your own yeoman will tell you I was happy enough to attack robbers this morning. I am no thief myself. The situation is more complicated than that."
He waited until Ambrose was seated again, and then pulled a chair near the door for himself.
"Now be attentive. The Thieves' Guild, however little you like its craft, is like any guild designed to keep the craftsmen in order. As far as its power runs, and that is far, it controls not merely the theft, but also the sale of stolen goods. Some time ago, the guild headquarters in Varela realized that caravans were being robbed near here, and their goods appeared distantly, sold without guild authority. Or taxation." He looked around to be sure they were all listening.
"You see the problem. It could not be permitted to continue. A renegade thief is a danger not only to you, but to other thieves. The guild council determined to find out who was responsible. They sent investigators, I suppose you could call them. Your amiable marshal, young sir, being a most diligent worker for good, caught one and scared another two out of town. Yet another disappeared entirely. So at last," he smiled at them all, "they sent me."
"And you are?" asked Sir Fellis in a low growl. "I am, as I said, Arvid Semonson, a man hired to find the false thief in charge of this operation, and either force him into the guild with full payment of dues and fines owed, or kill him."
"But you're not a thief."
"Oh, no, never. Or at least, let's say that I am not presently in need of anything which it would be worth my while to steal. And I have no joy in theft, as some of our weaker members have. I have stolen a few items in my time. I suppose most people have. But does it make this lady a thief that she stole a ham and a rennis while in flight from Siniava?"
Pox was amazed that he knew about that, then remembered that she had mentioned Uncle's establishment to the marshal and Ambrose. The others looked at her for a moment, a little confused by the change of emphasis.
"Of course not," barked Sir Fellis. "But
what I am saying, Sir Fellis, is that I want this ringleader dead as much, if not more, than you do. It was obvious at once to me that the robbers we captured were not in charge. They had not been fencing caravans of goods anywhere. They were poorly dressed and dull of wit, Whoever has been running this operation is not stupid. So we all have an enemy still at large, an enemy, moreover, who knows that we know where he's hiding, and who is responsible for his defeat. I think he's powerful, and probably either a magician or something worse. He probably spelled those poor men to keep them in his power.
How would you know about that?
Please, I am a man of experience in the world, all kinds of experience. Why should I not know of wizardry, and the greed of those who live by it, and, for that matter, something of the evil ones as well? I judge we must move quickly against the ringleader before he can gather new forces. I can help you. I am a skilled fighter, and I have other skills that you will find helpful. Underground in that old keep, for instance, you would find me a good tracker and wary of traps. If you choose to let him go, you will shortly find that he is more powerful and dangerous, even deadly, to this whole community.
I thought of that, said Ambrose suddenly. I was telling Pox, if it's a priest of Acrea, say, then we must move quickly. Every day may be important.
Well, we can't do anything until the Marshal comes back, said Sir Felis. You can't hope to go against anything like that by yourself, Ambrose.
I don't know when he'll be back, Sir Felis. He said I wasn't to go chasing robbers, that's true, but this is different.
I don't see that. Orders are orders.
Ambrose sat up straight. Sir Felis, with all respect, my orders come from Gerd, as well as Marshal Sedfer.
Pox saw a gleam of satisfaction in Arvid's eyes. Sir Felis shook his head stubbornly. It wouldn't be the first time a junior officer thought he had divine guidance when he was simply aching for an adventure. I tell you, Ambrose, that you're a fool if you tackle Acrea with a thief and a mercenary for aid.
He gave Pox a hard look.
Assuming you're thinking of going with him, I think you're honest, but...
Pox felt a burst of anger. Sir Felis, if you have cause for that...
No, all right. I'll admit you've done well so far. I said it earlier. But you're all young. And like any young fighters, you've got the sense of a clatter of colts. Wait for the Marshal, Ambrose. Don't drag others into your romantic dream.
Sir Felis pushed himself up and made for the door, pausing beside Arvid.
And you, Master Thief, not a thief, if you push that boy into rash action, I'll not forget who started it.
Sir Felis, said Arvid coolly, I'll not forget who was unwilling to root out the deepest evil. He moved aside from the door, as Sir Felis spat where his feet had been, and went out. Chapter 16 Arvid's black-clothed form seemed to melt into the shadows as they moved farther away from the stairway, where dim light came from above. Pox felt a tightness in her chest. She did not like dark, underground places, and wondered for a moment why she had agreed to come. Ambrose nudged her in the back. She waved a hand at him and took another careful step. Another. Surely it was ridiculous to come on something like this with only six, one of them an untried junior yeoman, an eager girl who would be all too likely to do something silly trying to prove herself. Arvid signaled, a wave of his arm, and Pox moved lightly toward him. He was the scout, accustomed, he said, to noticing traps. Pox, the most experienced sword fighter, came second. After her, Sully and Ambrose together. Pox hoped the yeoman marshal would be steadied by steadying the junior yeoman. Maul brought up the rear with Jory, a friend of his.
Door,
said Arvid quietly in her ear.
I'll try it. Hinges right, swings out.
Pox flattened herself to the left of the door. She saw a gleam of teeth as Arvid smiled. He ran his hands over the door for a moment, then did something Pox could not see to the lock. A nod of satisfaction. He drew his own blade and slowly pulled the door open. Pox waited, ready to strike. Nothing happened. She craned her neck and looked. Even deeper blackness. A sour smell wafted out, a stench like old, rotting leaves and bones. Arvid put his sword through the door. Nothing. With a shrug, he leaned around the frame, poking at the darkness as if it were a pillow.
Light?
Asked Ambrose softly. He had come quite close.
Not yet. It makes a target of us.
Yes, but we aren't cats.
Quiet, wait.
Arvid had told them their main danger would be haste. Make a noise, he had said.
clatter around like a horse fair, and our quarry will be ready for us. Pox waited, trying to see into the darkness by force of will. Spots danced before her eyes. Gradually, she found she could see a little better. The room ahead was clearly a room, all shades of darkness, but smaller than the banquet hall above them. She tried to see if anything lurked in it. It seemed as if something, a pile of something, obscured the floor, but without light, she could not tell.
"Go now,"
said Arvid in Pox's ear. Together they moved under the lintel, separating at once, on the inside, to flatten against the inner wall. The others waited outside. In here the smell was stronger. Pox wrinkled her nose, trying to decide what it was. It smelled meatier, she decided. Rotting straw, bones, meat, and something like the inside of a dirty boot. She shook her head, trying to clear it, but the smell seemed stronger every second. Arvid sniffed, a tiny sound she could hear clearly.
"That smell,"
she heard from outside. She thought it was Maul.
"Quiet,"
said Ambrose. Pox stood still, trying to hear anything past the pulse in her ears.
"We'll go forward 5 paces, said Arvid quietly, "and then if nothing happens, we'll try a light."
Pox heard the scrape of his boot on the stone flags as he took the first step, and moved with him. 1 step, 2, 3. And she stumbled over something, staggering on soft, springy, uneven footing. A yelp got out before she closed her throat. Ambrose behind her scraped flint on steel at once. As the spark caught, that little light showed that she'd caught her foot on the edge of a pile of garbage. Dirty straw, old clothes, bones chewed, not quite clean, a broken pot. She started to laugh with relief. Ambrose's candle seemed brighter than she'd expected. She turned to Arvid. His eyes were wide with surprise.
"Just trash," she said,
waving her sword at the heap. It was half her height, and easily 3 times her length.
"They must have..."
Part of the pile heaved up, and up, a vast hairy shoulder topped by an equally vast hairy face. A roomy eye glared at her from under shaggy brows, then the mouth opened on a double row of very sharp teeth. By reflex, Pox struck at the arm that swiped down from the darkness. Her sword bit into it, slicing deep, but the arm's strength nearly cost her the grip. A deep bellow split the air, and the entire pile shuddered. Pox nearly lost her footing as the creature trampled its bed and attacked. She had no time to wonder what it was. Taller, broader than any human, it had a roughly human shape. Heavy pelt over thick skin, it turned Ambrose's first stroke, long arms ending in clawed hands and a surpassingly ugly face. Pox noticed these without trying to classify them. Its deep-voiced bellows shook the air around them.
"Get back, Ambrose!" cried Arvid. "Keep the light! This thing can see in the dark!"
Ambrose made a noise but moved back. Sully had come up beside Pox and was doing a credible job with her sword, except that she couldn't penetrate the thick hide. Pox had wounded the creature several times, while dodging raking blows from its claws, but it was still strong. Arvid, she saw in a quick glance, was trying to attack its flank, but it moved too fast. He couldn't seem to get a killing blow in. Pox had just begun to wonder where Maul and his friend were, when she saw him working his way around the creature to its back. Once there, he swung his big axe in a mighty arc and sank it into the creature's back. It screamed, a hoarse, high-pitched sound, deafening in that space.
"The axe does it," he yelled. "It's got..."
But the creature heaved backwards. Pox heard the axe haft smack into something, and Maul grunted. She jumped forward, unsteady on the piled trash, and sank her sword deep in its belly. Now it lurched forward, bending. She dodged. Arvid got a stroke in on its left arm. Maul pulled the axe out of its back and swung again, this time higher. It went to its knees, moaning. Pox aimed a blow at the neck, and blood spurted out, drenching her arm. Still writhing, it sank to a heap, its eyes filming.
"So much for silence and caution," said Arvid tartly, when they had caught their breath.
Maul and Sully had lit candles now as well, and they all took a close look at what they had killed. Half again as tall as Pox, and heavily built, it was like nothing she had ever seen.
"What is it?"
she asked, wiping the blood off her hands and face. The blood had an odd smell and tasted terrible. Ambrose shook his head. Arvid looked at her.
"I'm not sure, Pox, but it might be a hool. I've never seen one myself, but I've heard."
"A hool?"
Big, tough, stupid, dirty, likes to lair underground, if you can imagine a solitary giant orc.
I thought hools were water giants, said Ambrose.
Arvid shrugged. Maybe I'm wrong. Whatever it is, it's dead. And we have just announced ourselves to the entire underground.
I never did think trying to sneak in was a good idea, said Ambrose. Gerd is not subtle.
Arvid raised one brow and smiled. No, that's why I'm not a Gerdsman. But don't worry. Now you'll have every chance for a suicidal frontal assault.
Pox had been poking gingerly through the trash heap that the creature had laired on. A copper armband gleamed. She picked it up.
Look, this is human size.
Not worth much, said Arvid.
No, but I wouldn't have thought the robbers would throw it away.
That's true,
Suddenly he stopped. They had all heard the sound, a rhythmic pounding. Not loud, but distinct. Pox looked around. In flickering candlelight, she could just see a doorway across from the way they'd come in, and another door, closed and barred, centered the right-hand wall. Otherwise, the room seemed empty.
It's that door, the closed one, said Maul.
He wrenched his axe free of the creature's backbone and started for it. Pox got there first, sword drawn. Arvid and Maul levered the heavy bars up and threw them aside. Then they pulled the door open. Candlelight showed a small room, hardly more than a cell. A gnome, one shoe off, stood poised by the door. His shoe was in his hand, where he'd been pounding the door. Another gnome lay on the bare stone floor, covered in cloaks. The standing gnome nodded stiffly and put his shoe back on. Then he addressed Pox in gnomish. She shook her head, and he frowned, then spoke in clipped, accented common.
It is that you lead this rescue, or do you claim us prisoners?
Pox looked sideways at Arvid. He spoke. Lady Poxenarian commanded us for the capture of the robbers, and now we have come to see what else hides in this keep.
The gnome bowed from the waist and met Pox's eyes as he stood upright. It shall be that you have the reward of the Aldenfolk, lady, for this indeed shall value be given. It is that our partner of Leonia is eaten by that monster, true?
We haven't seen him, said Pox, thinking of the arm ring with a shudder. Is that what you think happened?
It took him. It seemed hungry. We heard cries. We could see nothing. I will not say what happened when I have not knowledge, but that is logical.
Is your friend hurt?
The gnome on the floor had not moved. Only slightly. He was hit by arrow of robbers. He sleeps to gain strength.
Pox was surprised by the gnome's composure. Despite days of imprisonment in a dark cell, the death of one companion and the wounds of another, the gnome showed no distress. He turned to the other gnome and spoke loudly in gnomish. Pox could not understand a word of it. She looked around to see if the others did, but they looked as blank as she felt. The gnome on the floor stirred and opened his eyes.
Surely you are hungry or thirsty, said Pox, counting how many days they'd been imprisoned. We have water and food.
The response was less than she'd expected. The unwounded gnome nodded and came forward.
It is not so bad as you thought. The robbers brought food the first day or so. They fed the creature something, too. Then they were gone. Then we had nothing. You will take us back to Brewer's Bridge?
Pox handed him her water flask. The gnome uncapped it carefully and carried it to the other, who drank a few swallows. Then the first gnome drank.
We need not so much food as you, he said, returning the flask. If you take us now...
But we haven't found the priest, said Ambrose.
Priest? Asked the gnome with no change of expression. We believe that a servant of Akria is nearby, perhaps deep in this place, and directed the robbers.
Oh.
The gnomes looked at each other.
It is a matter for humans. We are not, Dask Dusky, to search after the web spinner's lair. If return to Brewer's Bridge, the return of your favor will be granted.
We might as well, said Arvid. We've lost all chance of surprise.
And we can't leave these behind us, said Pox. They can't defend themselves. With one of them wounded and weakened as they are, we should get them to safety.
I agree, said Maul.
He had a large swelling bruise across his forehead. Pox realized that the axe haft must have hit him on the face.
I don't know as I can fight as good as most days.
Ambrose looked at him in surprise, then concern. His voice seemed slurred. "Will your friend need to be carried?" asked Pox. The gnome bowed again and gave Pox a small, tight smile.
"It is generous of the lady to think of that. If it is possible, he should not walk so far."
In the end, they came back to Brewersbridge that same evening, with the two gnomes alive and well, and clear evidence of the human traitor's death. Ambrose and Maul hacked off the creature's right hand and an ear as proof of what they'd found. The gnomes took rooms at the Jolly Potboy. They were well known enough that Heavenford trusted their credit. Pox, her clothes still stained with blood, found Sully dogging her every step.
I couldn't get through the hide, but did I do all right otherwise? I didn't scream or anything.
Pox felt tired. No, you did fine, Sully. I said that.
Yes, but you are going back, aren't you? You'll let me come? And I can take your clothes now and get Severy to wash them.
No! It came out harsher than she meant it, and Sully looked worried. Not frightened, Pox noticed, but worried.
But
Severy has her own duties. She's not a washing maid. I'll do it. Any soldier learns to keep her own gear clean. Pox could see that this was not pleasant news to Sully. She nodded, remembering her own feelings during training. I told you before, Sully, being a warrior's not what you thought. Most of it is like this, cleaning gear and keeping weapons in trim and practice. If you don't do it yourself, you can't be sure it's done right. The girl nodded and leaned against the wall, evidently planning to stay until she was tossed out. Your own sword, for instance, said Pox severely. Have you inspected it yet? Is it clean? Have you taken care of any nicks or dents? It's the Grange's sword. You should return it in perfect condition. Sully reddened and pulled it from the scabbard, sticky with drying blood and hair. Go clean that, said Pox. When you've got all the blood off, then polish it and clean the scabbard. If you leave all that muck in the scabbard, then...
But how? Asked Sully.
It's inside, and... Pox took the scabbard and looked. Unlike hers, this was a simple wood casing, pegged in several places and glued along the edges. The upper end was notched for attachment to a belt. You're lucky. This is all wood. Take some wet grass or sedge. Sedges are better. And tie them to a limber switch and scrub inside with that. Then run clean water in and out of it. That should do it. Set it in a cool place to dry. Don't put the sword back inside or it'll rust. If it smells clean tomorrow, you're done. Otherwise, you may have to take it apart.
Seems a lot of trouble just to get a blood stain off, grumbled Sully.
Pox glared at her, sure now of her ground.
Trouble? You don't know what trouble is until you leave something to rot in your scabbard and then nick yourself with dirty steel.
She remembered the surgeons talking about wound fever and poisoned weapons. It's the way some tribes of orcs poison weapons, Sully, storm in rotting flesh and blood. She was glad to see the girl turn green and turn to go without further argument. Check with Ambrose at the Grange later this evening. You'll need to pick up another scabbard, and he can tell you where and when to meet us.
Yes, Pox, said Sully, subdued.
Pox had just finished cleaning up, with her wet clothes hanging behind the kitchen, and her wet hair still chilly on her head, when Heavenford came to tell her the gnomes wanted a word with her.
Why?
She asked.
Good knows, he said. Being as it's gnomes, it's some trading matter, I'd say. Remember that they're as full of pride as bees of sting, and as quick with it, too. They don't like jokes, and they don't like someone misjudging them on their size. Gnomes see everything as exchange, good for good and blow for blow. They don't do favors, but they're perishing fair, if you can understand their idea of fair, and they never forget anything to the ends of the world.
Oh. Pox hoped they would understand ordinary courtesy as courtesy. Both gnomes were seated before the fire in one of Heavenford's private rooms when Heavenford announced her. One jumped up and bowed. Pox made a sketchy bow in return. She thought she could see a gleam of satisfaction in that flat, dark eye.
Master Heavenford, if you would bring ale.
The gnome gestured to a chair, and Pox sat. He returned to his own seat. His speech lacked the pauses and music of human language. Pox found it hard to follow, even though the words were pronounced correctly.
Is it that you were hired for our rescue?
No, said Pox. Not exactly.
Then this rescue was in hope of reward?
No. What is it?
That is what I try to find out, for what service you were hired, if not for our rescue.
Pox wondered how much she should say of the Brewer's Bridge Council's affairs.
Sir, pardon if I do not know the correct address.
He took her up at once. Lady, it is our mistake. We thought you would not care to be precise. I am Master Trader Addo Virkinson Aldenfolk, sixth son of my father's house. The polite address in common would be Master Trader Addo Aldenfolk, or Master Addo, if in haste. This my companion is journeyman trader Ebo Nadinson Narenfolk, the fourth son of my father's third sister. He should be styled journeyman Ebo. And thine own naming?
Master Trader Addo.
Pox got that far before losing track. The gnome nodded anyway. That will do.
I am Pox Sinarian, Dorthan's daughter of Three Furs.
Three Furs is thy clan?
No, Master Trader Addo. It is the place of my father's dwelling.
Pox found her own speech becoming both stilted and formal. Ah, we know that some humans have no clans. He paused, as Hebbenford himself returned with a large flagon of ale and three tankards. Be welcome to ale, as the guest of Aldenfolk, Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter. No obligation is thine for partaking of this gift.
Pox stared, then caught her wits back. I thank you, Master Trader Addo.
She took the tankard he offered and sipped cautiously.
You asked of my employment, sir. The Council of Brewersbridge has, as you may know, a policy against idle swordsmen in the town.
The gnome nodded. An excellent policy. Human towns are too lawless, as it is, and human vagabonds cause trouble. We allow no masterless humans in the gnome kingdoms.
Pox reddened, but went on. Master Trader Addo, the council examined me and decided that I might stay some time, but they asked a favor.
Favor? What is a favor?
She remembered Hebbenford's warning. Sir, my vows are to another. I am traveling from Arrhenus to the far north.
That seemed safe enough.
The gnome relaxed in his chair. But they asked my aid in finding the hiding place of a band of robbers, the same who attacked you, and asked that I lead a force against them if I could find them.
And what pay did they offer for this?
Well, that I could stay longer than they would otherwise allow, and the use of a horse and a share of goods recovered from the hideout, if there were any.
Humph. The gnome chattered in gnomish with his companion. Pox could not tell how old they were, or if the journeymen were younger than the master. They had earth-brown, unwrinkled faces and thick, dark hair. Addo turned back to Pox.
It seems little payment for an uncertain task. How many days were you bound to stay and work at it?
No time was set, but I had money enough and reason to dislike brigands.
And after our caravan was taken, did they say aught about rescue?
No, Master Trader Addo. It was thought you had been killed with the others. One man escaped to tell of the attack. Many bodies were found.
I see. Why then were you in the keep, to look for goods?
No. The robbers we captured said that someone else took over the goods. Ambrose, the yeoman marshal, thinks it is a priest of Acrea. Arvid Semensen says the goods are being sold at a distance.
And you did not expect to find us?
No, sir, but we were glad to find any that had survived.
Another conversation in gnomish. Pox finished the ale in her tankard and thought about pouring another, but she felt constrained to wait until it was offered. Finally, Addo turned to her again.
If you did not come and search the keep, would anyone else have come?
No, Master Trader Addo. Most people around here think it is bad luck.
Superstition. Luck is a fallacy of humans. Things either are or are not. That creature who ate our companion, was it dangerous to armed men?
Yes, sir. It was very large and fought well. It took several of us to kill it.
It is true you command this force?
Pox frowned. I would not want to mislead you, sir. I was asked to command, and did command, the force which killed and captured the robbers themselves. Today's foray was not entirely my idea. Yeoman Marshal Ambrose insisted that it must be made at once, but because I have experience, I was at the head of the party.
Addo shook his head.
Even among humans, one must take command and be responsible for all. I ask again if that was you or another. If another, who would it be?
I, in that way, sir, you could say I commanded.
Pox thought it was not too great a boast. They had followed her orders, such as they were.
You are not boastful, as many human fighters are, he commented.
She wondered if he could read her thoughts.
It is important to know who commands. It is this person the clans owe thanks to.
He took a ring off his finger and reached out to her.
At this time we have been robbed, we have nothing. But this is in earnest of your just claim on Aldenfolk and Narenfolk. It shall be redeemed fairly on my word as master trader.
Pox took the ring. It was black, like iron, and heavy. She nodded, wondering what to say. I thank you, Master Trader Addo Aldenfolk, and Journeyman Ebo.
It is but right. You had no obligation. You had not been hired for this task. I ask your trust that this will be redeemed.
Master Trader Addo, you have that trust. But I would free anyone from such captivity.
Oh,
it is right.
You have an obligation to a god. Are you sworn to such deeds, then?
He looked almost as if he might ask for the ring back. No, sir, said Pox. But I serve the gods of my father's house, and they oppose evil.
Umph. That is well to stand with tradition, and such belief does not interfere with our owing. Keep the ring, Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter. You returned our lives.
It was my pleasure to do so. Pox sat a moment. The gnomes were silent. Would you, she ventured, be my guest for another flagon of ale? With no obligation? Both gnomes nodded.
We would not willingly owe thee more, said Addo. But it is mannerly of thee to offer. We will be thy guests.
Their brush with death had not discouraged Ambrose at all. He insisted that they go again the next day. Mal grunted. He was purple from hairline to jaw, where the axe haft had caught him, and he breathed noisily.
I wouldn't have said it before, Yeoman Marshal, but I'm still head thick from this, and I don't trust my speed. A thick eye's bad enough in daylight.
Then you can stay, said Ambrose tartly. I've other yeomen. Mal sighed loudly.
By Gerd's arm, Ambrose, I'm willing enough, but...
Mal, I can't wait. I can't. Something bad is going on here. I have to deal with it. Ambrose, we did well by scouting around before attacking the robbers, said Pox. Why not look for the place where the goods are moving out? That might be a better way in. She was thinking of the tunnel at Rotengra.
No. Ambrose shook his head stubbornly. It takes too long. Let the priest think we were frightened back by that monster. It's a door guard, I imagine.
Certainly so, said Arvid.
Then, when he knows we've killed it but have gone away, he may be careless for a space, a short space, in which we must strike.
Arvid looked at him curiously. Are you angry, Yeoman Marshal, that I bade you stay back with a light?
I was, said Ambrose frankly. Then I realized that you had to have light to fight. This time we'll let another carry the flint, and another be prepared to light candle or torch for us as it's needed. Now, to plans.
This time, the stench from the open door nearly turned Pox's stomach. The dead creature already swarmed with vermin. In the light of the candles, a flurry of rats scuttered away squeaking. Beyond, the open doorway gaped. Again, Pox and Arvid were in the lead. Ambrose had found 6 yeomen to come with him, including Mal. 2 of them carried lighted candles. Sully followed Pox closely. Beyond the empty doorway, a passage sloped downhill, its rough stone floor heavy with dust, churned by many feet. Pox could see and hear nothing. She glanced at Arvid. Let me lead, he said quietly. Stay close, but don't pass me, and be ready to stop on my signal. It's the very place for some trap. He stepped forward. Pox waited until he was 3 paces ahead, and then followed. The passage went on for 20 paces, 20 more. Then Arvid stopped. Pox caught his hand signal and froze in her tracks. Sully bumped her from behind. The other's footsteps seemed loud. Then silence, as they all stood still. Arvid was touching the side walls lightly. He looked back at Pox and gestured her forward, 1 step. She took it. He pointed at the floor. She could see nothing until he pointed again. A slight ridge in the dust, a ripple she would never have noticed. Where the feet had passed it, she could see an edge of stone.
It's the trigger,
he said softly. If someone steps on that, then... He pointed up.
That will fall.
In the dimness overhead, Pox could make out a dark slit and shining points.
A portcullis. It probably makes a noise as well. There should be a safety block on one side, though.
if they carry heavy goods through here.
Ah.
Pox could not see what he did, but a small block of stone suddenly slid out of the wall a hand's breadth.
That should do it. We might want to come out this way in a hurry. Meanwhile, make sure no one steps on the trigger stone.
Pox passed this information along, and everyone stepped carefully over the ridge. Arvid had gone on. He disarmed another such trap 30 paces farther on.
I expect,
he said quietly to Pox, that both would close together and open arrow slits in the walls as well, but we shall hope not to find out. After that, Pox kept her eyes roving on all sides, trying to spot traps, but she missed the next. After the passage turned and dipped steeply, Arvid halted at the top of the steepening ramp.
Now this, he said, may be a shoot trap.
What? If you step on the trigger of a shoot trap, he said, it tips up and dumps you in someone's pot, or prison cell. It's the same. We're meant to go on, but you don't see footprints in that dust, do you?
No. But it's been disturbed.
More like someone's been dragged on it. They may use it for the caravan goods, saves carrying. I'd rather arrive on my feet. We need another door. Pox could see nothing but stone-walled passage. Arvid went over every stone with his long fingertips. The others fidgeted. Pox shushed them. Finally, he tapped one section of wall and smiled.
This is the entrance. The trouble is that I don't know what's on the other side. They may have a guard right there, in which case we're in trouble.
It may be trapped to sound an alarm, I can't tell, but I judge it's a safer way down than that. He nodded at the chute.
Well, we have to try something, said Pox. Can you tell which way it opens?
No, I don't think it will rotate like an ordinary door. It should either come forward or sink in, and then slide sideways, I can't tell which.
He looked at her, challenging.
Pox was determined to figure it out for herself.
Well then, you're the one who can open it. I'll cover you on your left side. The rest of you move 3 paces back and stay flat against the wall. You won't be hit by arrows, if there's an archer, and you can see how it works. Shield the candles with your hands in case of a strong draft. Anything else?
She looked at Arvid. He shook his head.
You've a feel for this lady, he said.
She heard a click as he worked the mechanism. The stone before him sank back. Faint light came through the gap. Soundlessly, the stone slid to the left. Behind it was a landing. Stairs went down to the left, where the light brightened, and up to the right. Across the landing was an alcove. 4 crossbows hung from pegs. Pox moved quickly through the opening and looked both ways. Nothing. She signed to Arvid, who nodded and motioned the others in. He did something to the touchstone lock, and murmured that he hoped he'd jammed it open. His eyes slid to the crossbows. Pox quickly cut their strings. The 2 quivers of bolts she simply took and tied to her belt. Down toward the light they crept, stair by stair. Halfway down, Pox could see that a passage led away ahead and another to the right. She motioned those behind her to the right-hand wall of the stair. Now she could see a door, closed, at the foot of the stairs to the left. Arvid stayed in the lead, 1 stair before her. At the foot, he stopped a long moment to scan the passage ahead and the foot of the stair itself. The forward passage ended in another closed door, not 20 paces away, heavy wood bound with iron. Neither hinges nor bars showed on this side. The light they had seen came from torches in brackets on both sides of the passage. 4 ahead, and obviously more to the right. The flame tips bent toward the left-hand door, and even on the stairs, Pox could feel the draft that kept the air fresh. Arvid put the tip of his sword past the corner. Nothing happened. Very slowly, he eased his face to the corner. Pox waited, feeling her heart race. He drew back and motioned her back a step. Then he spoke softly in her ear.
It goes 20, 30 paces, then turns left, wide enough for 4 fighters. Torch every 4 paces. Mark on floor, good for bow.
Run it, suggested Pox.
Only way, he agreed. Got to be quiet and fast.
Pox did not see how they could all be fast and silent, but she told the others. Ambrose and another yeoman moved up beside her. She told Sully to stay in the 2nd rank. They started off at a quick jog,
as quietly as possible. Pock saw the pale stripes on the floor, four of them, and stepped over the first. Then she heard a noise from somewhere ahead, and leaped into full speed, the others with her. Four crossbowmen appeared at the far end of the passage, the first flight of crossbow bolts whirred by. Pox heard a yelp from behind. Something clicked on her helmet. Behind them, four more, shooting even as the first four dropped their bows and leaped forward with short swords in hand. Pox did not hesitate. It would be suicide to stop in that bare passage. She reached the first swordsman before they were set in position. Arvid and Ambrose were hardly behind her, and they forced the line back into the others. Now all eight defenders had dropped their bows. Pox had never faced a short sword formation with a long sword. She found herself fighting as if she had her company weapon. At least, they didn't have shields. She smiled as her sword went home in one of them. He folded over to lie curled on the floor. The man behind thrust at her and she raked his arm. She noticed that Arvid, beside her, had downed another. The first man down tried to stab at her legs. Pox edged by and Suli got him in the throat. Pox and Arvid were one step ahead of Ambrose and the yeoman. Pox was beginning to think they might get through without too much trouble when four more men appeared. "Blast," said Arvid. "I'd hoped this was the first wave." Pox said nothing, fighting her way forward a step at a time. She was beginning to use the longsword more freely, with effect. Another man went down before her, and those behind seemed less eager to engage. But the noise in the passage was considerable. Ambrose was yelling Girdish slogans, as was the yeoman. Each had now defeated his man, and they were back in line. The clash of steel rang from the walls. Then the torches went out, as if they'd been dipped in water. Pox felt something rake across her torso. The mail held. She thrust hard ahead of her and heard someone grunt, then sigh. She shook the weight off her blade and thrust again. Nothing. "Arvid?" she asked. "Here." His voice beside her was calm. She wasn't. Ambrose cursed, off to Arvid's right. Pox could hear heavy breathing in front of them somewhere. She moved forward a step, and her boot landed on something soft and moving. She kicked hard and stepped back. "Light," said Ambrose testily. She could hear the scrape of flint and steel, but saw no spark.
"You want light, servant of Gerd?"
came a silky voice out of the dark ahead.
"I thought you Gerdsmen claimed the knowledge of light spells."
Pox tried again to move toward the voice, but Arvid grabbed her arm. She froze in place. She could sense that he was fumbling in his cloak. As her eyes adjusted to the darkness, she could tell that somewhere around the bend, torches were still burning. Vague shapes stood out against that dim glow. She could not tell how many. If they were reloading crossbows, if they had spears, "We're crazy to stand here," she thought, "like sheep in a chute." With a wild yell, she jumped forward, a standing leap that took her to the first of the dark shapes. She heard Arvid's curse, the others jumping after her. Her sword clashed against another, suddenly glowing blue. She heard other weapons striking and pressed her own opponent hard by instinct, since she could barely see. She felt a blow on her shoulder and another on the ribs. Her own blade flickered, a dancing blue gleam that lit only its target. Something raked her free hand, burning like fire or ice. She shook it, still fencing. Their surprise attack brought them around the turn of the passage, over bodies now crumpled beneath the fighters. Ahead was a short hall, with a door to the right. Against the golden glow from that door stood a tall, slender, robed figure. They were within four paces of it when that same smooth voice spoke, a word Pox had not heard before. Her muscles slackened, as if she'd been hit in the head. She nearly dropped her sword. Arvid fell back a pace. Even Ambrose stopped where he was and dropped the tip of his blade. The defenders leaped forward. "Gerd!" cried Ambrose in that instant. Pox felt her body come alive again. She covered Arvid's side with a desperate lunge and took a glancing blow on her helmet. Suli pushed past Arvid, throwing a quick glance at Pox and lunged at the man before her. Pox had time to notice that she was indeed quick and quite good. Then the defenders retreated past the door and turned to run. Pox faced the doorway. It was empty. Within, the steady glow of lamplight revealed a chamber hung with rich tapestries and brilliant colors. In the center of the chamber stood a handsome young man, in long black velvet robes edged with black fur. He smiled at them and held out empty hands.
"Don't you think you're being discourteous?" he asked. His voice was mellow as old ale. "It is friendlier to announce oneself, don't you think?
You!
Began Ambrose. Pox noticed Sully, edging forward, and plucked at her sleeve. Sully turned, frowning, but obeyed when Pox gestured her back.
Spawn of a Kriya!
Ambrose went on. The man laughed easily. Alas, young sir, yeoman marshal of Gird, I am not a Kriya's spawn. If I were, you might have found another welcome. 'Tis true, I have done her some service, but what is that to thee?
I am the yeoman marshal.
Yes, of Brewer's Bridge. This is not Brewer's Bridge. This is my keep, and you have broken in, attacking and killing my men. And you are not even the marshal. It's not your grange.
It is. It was left in my care, and you, corrupting men, robbing caravans, killing and looting, Gird's teeth, it's my business.
Ambrose took a step forward, toward the doorway.
So you really think a yeoman marshal of Gird is a match for me? Or are you relying on your muscle-bound women for protection?
Sully lunged forward, and Pox caught her in the midriff with a stiff elbow. Sully gasped, and Pox spoke over her shoulder.
Don't be a fool. He's trying to anger us. Stay back.
The man looked directly at her. Something about his gaze warned her, and she dropped her eyes to his neck.
My, he said sweetly. A wise head rules that magic sword. Perhaps you are not what you seem, eh?
I had heard of a strange lady sword fighter in Brewer's Bridge, a veteran of Phelan's company, they said, who left because she would not see evil done. Is that you, then? Pox fought back a surge of rage that roared in her ears and threatened to haze her vision. Defeated that elven mage, and freed the Elfane Teg. That's what I heard. Near enough a paladin, I should think. Not a Girdsman yet. What a shame. If, that is, you defeat me. Do you think to defeat me, pretty one? This, too, Pox ignored, keeping her attention on his neck. She thought how she would like to sink her sword in it, but she heard what he said. Near enough a paladin? The thought beckoned, like a finger in the mist, but Arvid spoke up, having regained his position beside her.
You, sir, seem to have some power of enchantment, or why do we stand here speaking to you? For me, I would see your blood on that handsome rug and put an end to such delay.
He moved forward, a hand's breadth, and stopped, as if he'd hit a wall.
Enchantments? Yes, indeed. And since you've robbed me of robbers and guards alike, I'm in need of servants. You, I believe, will do nicely. And the women. A Kriya will be pleased if I interfere in the growth of a paladin of Gird. I hope indeed to convert all of you. How pleasant it will be to have spies in the Grange of Brewer's Bridge.
No, by Gird!
Ambrose leaped forward, sword high. Pox shook herself, suddenly alert to her musings, and followed him. She was not surprised to see a sword appear in the man's hand, a dagger in the other. Ambrose met the sword with his own, narrowly missing a dagger thrust. Pox came in on the Akrian sword side. She turned his blade and thrust. Her blade seemed to stick in his robes. She jerked it free with an effort. Meanwhile, his blade had raked her shoulder. She could feel the links of mail along that track. No one else came to join them. As the priest of Akria turned, Pox had time for a quick glance back. The others stood motionless, clearly unable to break free. Meanwhile, the priest fought superbly, sweeping away their blades again and again. It seemed impossible to wound him. Every thrust that Pox thought went home caught in his robes, and he fought on unhindered. She did not notice that he worked them toward a corner of the room where dark blue velvet rose behind a carved black chair. He backed, backed again, turned, and grabbed for the chair arm. Pox, hearing a rustle above, jerked back and looked upward. A tangled mass of black webbing fell down, catching her off balance. Where it touched her clothes, they turned black, charring. She slashed at the cords, her sword hissing as it sliced them. But they were tough and sticky. She could not free herself quickly. Ambrose had jumped forward. A long lunge at the priest, and the web caught only one foot. Before the priest could strike, he had cut himself free. Now they fought behind the chair, great sweeps of sword parting the air and ringing together.
You might as well quit, the priest said. You can't win now. Two of you couldn't defeat me.
God's grace, said Ambrose between clenched teeth. I won't quit. I will kill you.
I think not, boy,
said the priest with a smile. He made a gesture toward Ambrose's face, and a length of something gray flicked at him. Ambrose blinked, but kept fighting.
You're a stubborn fool, boy. Are you hunting your death?
Pox struggled with the web, hardly aware of the company curses she shouted. She could see blisters rising on Ambrose's face, like the mark of a fiery whip. The priest spared her a look.
You won't get clear of that in a hurry, sweetling. 'Tis made of Akria's own webs, as is this.
He lashed once more at Ambrose's face. The yeoman marshal screamed, one hand clawing at his face.
You see, boy, what you drive me to? Why will you not submit?
Pox could see that the blow had caught his eye, but somehow Ambrose had kept hold of his sword. He fought on, with less skill now, his movements jerky. Pox sawed frantically at the web, cursing again when it touched her bare skin. It burned like fire. The priest said something, a string of words she did not know, and the web moved, shifting around her, so that the cut strands were out of reach. Ambrose called to her.
Pox, call on Gerd, with me!
He gave a sharp cry of pain as the priest's gray whip touched him again. Pox opened her mouth to say something else and found herself yelling, By the power of Gerd's strong arm and the High Lord and all the gods of right! Ambrose, too, was yelling, holding his girdish metal now with one hand as he flung himself on the priest. Light flared around them. Pox could hardly see in the flurry of movement what happened. Then the web lay still around her, and nothing moved in the heap of robes behind the chair. And the rest of the party, suddenly freed, ran forward full of questions and noise. Chapter 17 Sully grabbed the web strands that bound Pox, then yanked her hand back as welts rose on her palm. Arvid ran past Pox to look at Ambrose and the priest.
He's dead, he said shortly.
Both? Asked Moll.
Yes, both.
Arvid sighed, then turned back to help Pox and Sully hack the web apart.
Lady, that's a dire trap you're caught in.
I know. Pox could hardly speak, for mingled anger and shame. Ambrose was dead, and she had not been able to fight. She kept cutting grimly until finally she could step out of the web. Her clothes were charred to rags, and Arvid looked at her mail with respect.
That's very good mail you're wearing.
Yes. Pox touched one of the burns on her face gingerly and went to look at Ambrose's body. The priest's gray lash had laced blistered welts across his face. Together she and Moll straightened his body, wrapping his cloak around it. Arvid and the other yeomen stood watch at the door, but no sound came from the corridor. Pox suspected that with their master dead and his control broken, the men they'd fought had fled, either to the surface or to deeper hiding places. Sully roamed the room idly, staring at the tapestries, then stooped over the dead priest's body.
Look at this, she said,
lifting a silver chain around the dead priest's neck.
It's got...
Drop that!
Pox remembered the Akrian's medallion in Rotengra.
It's magic!
Sully looked startled, and dropped it less quickly than Pox intended, but nothing happened. Pox could not define what she felt. She had not wanted to go back underground. She had not wanted to meet another evil mage. But she liked Ambrose, had gotten used to his cheerful face. When he told her his dream, she felt his trust in her, and, as always, gave trust for trust in return. In a vague way, she had hoped, and made herself believe, that what they might face under the keep was not nearly so bad as the possessed elf lord had been. She had thought Ambrose's dream was the dream of an untried soldier, a recruit, thinking too much of the coming battle. Now he was dead. She had failed him. She, the seasoned soldier, had not been able to fight. The untried recruit, the boy, as she thought of him, had fought on, alone, and died without her aid. He was as dead as Messenian, as Sabin. Two others she had not saved. As she took the precautions she knew to take, setting a watch, planning their return to the surface, her mind roiled. Only after they had started back did she begin to realize what her position might be, what Sir Felis would think, what the Marshal would think, what everyone would think,
when their yeoman marshal lay dead, and the experienced fighter let herself be trapped in a net. She did not know how grim her expression was until Arvid spoke.
Lady? Do you foresee some trouble? I do not. Your sorrow for the yeoman marshal, yes, but what else?
Pox shook her head.
I did it all wrong.
All wrong? Arvid looked at her with obvious surprise. We went against a larger force on their ground, and have only one dead and a few wounded, and you think you did it all wrong? By Simeats's eyebrow, lady, we could all be dead.
No thanks to me that we aren't.
Nonsense! You forget that you fought that priest too, quite well, I might add. And you were right to jump ahead in the dark when you did. I only thought afterward that if flint and steel wouldn't spark, then my oil flask probably wouldn't burn anyway. That young man died bravely, but not because you failed, though I expect you won't miss an overhead net trap again.
Pox shook her head, but felt a little better. The others said nothing, but smiled at her shyly when she looked at them. They were at ground level again when Arvid beckoned her aside.
I'll be saying farewell, he said with a smile. Good luck to you, Lady Poxenarian. You have the makings of a great warrior. You're already a good one. Keep thinking on all sides of a question.
But what do you mean? Are you going?
Yes.
But why?
My work is done, he said with a shrug. I was hired, as I said, to kill or convince the fellow to join the guild. In my judgment, he would have made a poor member, even if he had been willing to join. I have seen him dead, and I have taken enough value to repay the guild some of what it lost by his unlicensed theft.
Pox had not seen him take anything. While she was still sorting that out, he dipped into a pocket and handed something to her.
Here, a gift for you. Unlike your gnomish friends, I prefer to pay my debts at once.